And good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Coffee Talk XL. I'm Kevin Barbaro, and you're listening on talkradio.nyc, or you're watching live on facebook.com/talkradionyc. I'm not sure if anybody can see me right now, as a matter of fact, so hang on one second while we try to switch the view here. Because right now, all I'm seeing is the talkradio.nyc logo. But in any event, I know you can hear me. Oh, you can see me. All right. Well, there we go. So let me just do this. And hold on one second, folks. Live broadcasting, man. I'm telling you. That's how it rolls. So in any event, appreciate everybody coming back here and listening in on talkradio.nyc. The show, it keeps getting bigger and bigger, man. I'm really excited about it. Great to see a lot of my friends back from the world of acting and also the world of concert production, the world of athletics and whatnot. So again, I can't even see myself right now, so I'm not sure what's going on here with the video feed. But regardless, I got a great episode for you tonight. I want to talk about it's Pride Month, right? I you got to be living under a rock to understand that at this point. So here's kind of like a really interesting story, a really unique story for me. Now, I said on my preview to the show that I've always been an inclusive guy. I love everybody, man. I love everybody. I don't judge anybody. It's not my place to make decisions for other people. It's not my place to judge other people. And I don't care where you come from, what color you are, what race you are, what ethnicity you are, what religion you are, what orientation that you have. It doesn't matter to me. The only thing I care about is that, are you a good person or you're not a good person? That's the only thing I care about. And so I've always been supported, particularly in my adult life, with my friends and my colleagues in the LGBTQ world. And but I, being honest, as I was saying in the preview, I really wasn't educated at all about the world of transgender. And I know that because I come from the world of athletics, you know, there's a big controversy and a big discussion nowadays is the discussion about, you know, whether or not trans females should be allowed to compete against cis females, and that entire, you know, controversy. See, I'm not talking about that. I don't even want to get into that discussion. But what I'm talking about is just not really being educated and not really understanding the entire process by which somebody becomes where they feel as though they need to transition from male to female or female to male. So I've always been supportive, but I really didn't understand it. But I'm going to tell you something, man. This is Pride Month, and this is something that I hope resonates with someone, that they can kind of understand the entire situation so that they can open their eyes, open their heart, open their mind to a little bit more of an understanding here. So let me start off by saying that this all starts, before I was an actor, and this is an important kind of context, backstory here. So before I was an actor, I moved to New York City. If you want to listen to episode 2 or so, I talk about my journey where I was a college coach for over 20 years. So for 22 years, I was an NCAA Division I coach for track and field and cross country, and the last 15 of which as a head coach, and really successful, had a great career. My last 15 years, I was at the University of Toledo. The University of Toledo is in the Mid-American Conference, and I was, you know, MAC Coach of the Year 5 out of the 15 times. We won 5 championships, and even still to this day, I'm the only coach in women's cross country to take 3 teams to the NCAA championships in a row in the conference history. So I had a great career. I was really successful. There's a point to me telling all of this. So about a decade ago, everything goes belly up, right? Goes belly up, and it's my own fault. I made some terrible life decisions. I made some terrible ethical decisions, and I ended up screwing up my whole career. I've already talked about this many, many times over the years on all of my shows, but just putting this all into, you know, further context for everyone. So I moved to New York City to become an actor and literally live out of my car for 18 months. Again, this is all part of my story, and you can watch the other episodes and you can hear about it. And so while I was in the city, I ended up getting cast in a small one-act play that was going to be at the Producers Club, which is in Hell's Kitchen in New York City. If you're an actor, you know exactly where I'm talking about. If you're an actor in New York City, for sure, you know where I'm talking about. So I get cast in this one-act play. This is about 7 years ago, where I was just kind of really starting to get going here, maybe 8 years ago in the acting world. And so it's my very first night, and we're going to have our very first read. And it's a small one-act play. I'm cast as one of the two actors in this play. So we decide that we're going to meet at the other actor's apartment, which was in Harlem. So I take the subway there, and, you know, I go in, and his name is Brian Michaels. And I said, okay, you know, we introduce ourselves. And, you know, of course, the first time you're meeting somebody, and then the director was there. First time you're meeting somebody, you're just kind of going through the niceties and the cordials and, hey, where are you from, et cetera. So we start talking. And, you know, he says he's from Ann Arbor, Michigan. That's interesting, man. I'm not from Toledo, but I lived in Toledo for 15 years. So then we get to talking a little bit further, and Brian tells me that that he was in track and field. He ended up going to Kent State University. And I said, well, that's really coincidental. I was the track coach at the University of Toledo for 15 years. And so Brian tells me, well, he did track at Kent State. I said, wow, I didn't remember. I couldn't, you know, but that wouldn't have been necessarily that unusual, because I was a women's coach. I didn't coach men's track and field, particularly the last 13 years of my career. I only specifically coached the women. And so Brian gets to telling me that, you know, he was a thrower at Kent State University. I said, man, that's really cool. I mean, what a coincidence that, you know, I'm here in New York, and just starting out in my acting career, and I used to be a former coach at the University of Toledo, and here I am paired up with somebody who was a former track athlete in my same sport at Kent State University, which is right in our conference. And so, but like I said, I had never heard of him, and that's fine. So we go through the whole thing. We start rehearsing and whatnot. When I go home, I decide, well, hey, listen, I'm going to look this guy up, just out of curiosity, to see if I can find any results for him. And so when I Google Brian Michaels, Kent State University, I don't really find any results. I can't see where, and he said that he was a thrower. Now, at first I was kind of taken aback that he said he was a thrower, because he's a little bit on the short side, maybe about 5'6"-ish. but you know, muscular dude, you know, but Kent State, my good buddy, who Nathan Fanger is the throws coach there and associate head coach. He's been there forever. He's been there since way back when I was coaching. And he's had smaller guys, maybe guys my size, that had become very good at the throws. And so I'm like, oh, well, maybe he wasn't any good. You know, it's no big deal. Maybe he was a walk-on, you know, and never really got to compete and whatnot because he's kind of a small guy, you know, compared to other throwers and whatnot. So anyway, we do the play together. We become friends. We become buddies, right? And we start following each other through our acting career. And he's, you know, doing – we're kind of on a similar trajectory now. I'm more of a commercial actor. I think everybody kind of understands that. Whereas he's more of a dramatic actor. But we're kind of on a similar kind of trajectory, and we're talking about doing some collaboration and stuff. So this goes on for like a couple of years, right? Anyway, fast forward to about 2 years ago. So now Brian and I have known each other and have worked together on a couple of occasions and have become, you know, friends in the acting world and communicate, you know, through social media and whatnot for about 5 years. And I'm actually in the city. So at this point now, I'm actually a full-time actor. You know, this is only a few years ago. I'm a full-time actor, and I was actually, I have two homes. I have one in Myrtle Beach. I got one in New York, and I was at my Myrtle Beach home. I had to go back to the city for a callback for either a movie or something big, something, you know, significant enough that I would fly back to the city. So I fly into the city, into LaGuardia. I take the train in. Well, I take the bus and then the train into the city. I go and do the callback. And as I'm heading back up to, I'm walking up 7th Avenue to go to Madison Square Garden, which is where Penn Station is. And as I'm walking up 7th Avenue, I mean, this is kind of like the world of acting. You run into your friends. All of a sudden, I see Brian over on the side, and he's on the phone in kind of like the entryway to like a bank or something there on 7th Avenue, like maybe around 28th Street or so. And you know, he's in a conversation. I don't want to interrupt him. Man, it's great to see you, blah, blah, blah. And so he's like, listen, wait. And I want to talk to you. I just got to finish up this phone call. So I kind of sit back and, you know, kind of just, you know, on my phone or whatever, waiting for him to finish up his phone call. And we're actually going to go to our first commercial break right now. When I come back, I'm going to finish this story, and it really is fascinating. It's been quite a buildup here for the last like 13 minutes or whatever. But in any event, I decide that I'm going to wait for him to get off the phone, and then we're going to finish our conversation. And when I come back from that commercial break, I'm going to finish that conversation and see where it leads. I'm Kevin Barbaro. You're listening to Coffee Talk XL on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your Conscious Consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you interested in having a better relationship with yourself, others, and God? greetings. I'm your host, Dr. George Andow, for the show A Journey Through Into Awareness. On my show, we journey into the awareness that the mind of God is the true seat of our personal consciousness. We join together each Monday at 7 p.m., so tune in on Talk Radio NYC.
Did you know that nearly one in five adults in the U.S. battles mental illness? Hi, my name is Albert Dabba. I'm the host of the show Extra Innings. Extra Innings, I discuss the topics of wellness, mental health, and the experience of surviving multiple suicides within my family. Listen live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern to Extra Innings for discussions with sports figures, artists, mental health professionals, and many others. That's Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Kevin Barbaro, and you're listening to Coffee Talk XL on talkradio.nyc. So I'm telling the story about myself and my friend Brian Michaels, who is an actor in New York City, and I'm walking through the city, and I run into him. So he says, hey, wait a second. You know, he's on the phone and whatnot. So he and I have had lots of conversations over the course of time about just life in general and the analogies between in the world of athletics, the world of acting, because we both came from athletics. And so we are having these discussions. So anyway, he gets off the phone. He's like, hey man, I'm just so excited to see you, et cetera, et cetera. I had seen on social media that morning that he was going to be on a national TV show that night. I had seen it on Twitter or Facebook or something like this. And so I was congratulating him. And he's like, yeah, it's just really been crazy. You know, there's just been a lot of interviews and all this kind of stuff. And I'm thinking in my head, like, you know, it's interesting. You know, I'm excited for him. But I've been on national TV before. I've been at a lot of different shows. I've been in movies. I've been tons of commercials and stuff. And I've never been in a situation where it was like that big of a deal, to be frank. And so I'm just in my head, I'm like, well, that's kind of interesting that there's like this big deal about it, but I'm not really kind of processing the whole thing. So he's like, yeah, you know, and GLAAD has really gotten involved, which is just wonderful. And I'm like, wow, that's really cool. You know, I'm just so happy for you. Now, while we're having the conversation, in my head, I'm trying to kind of grasp why GLAAD would be involved, because Brian, when I went to his house the very first time, like 5 years ago, I met his wife. And so I'm thinking, well, in my head, you know, while I'm having the conversation with him, well, maybe he's, I don't know, bisexual or, you know, some. I mean, I really don't know. You know, I don't really care one way or the other. It's just, but I'm just kind of trying to wrap my head around why GLAAD would be involved with this. And so we finish our conversation. I fly back to Myrtle Beach. Now, I missed the show that he was on because I was actually on the plane. And so I'm actually on my plane and I don't have an opportunity to watch the show that Brian was on and that he was talking about. So the next morning, all of a sudden I see like on social media that he's just getting blown up. Hey, saw you on TV last night. Man, that's so great. That's so wonderful. But it's not like our buddies that are filling him in. It's famous people that are tweeting at him and whatnot. And I'm just like, man, this must have been a way bigger deal than I thought. I mean, I'm stunned about this. Now, going back real quick to where my life as a track coach is a part of this story. My really good friends in coaching, a couple of my really good friends in coaching are now the coaches at Wichita State. They were the coaches at Kent State University back when I was coaching. And they had asked me several times. I went out there actually to Wichita because I was the ESPN on-field commentator guy for the track championships that they were hosting and for their conference. And while I was out there, they had asked me multiple times if I ever run into Breanne Smith. And I'm like, no, I've never, you know, and they're like, yeah, she's an actor. You know, she's married to a woman and she lives in the city. Oh, that's interesting. But, you know, there's a lot of actors in the city. I've never run into her, you know. Now, Breanne Smith, back when I was coaching, was one of the best athletes that have ever come through the Mid-American Conference. I want to say she's one of the only athletes in the throws that had actually won all four throws at the conference championship, or she was like first or second. There was something about, I mean, it was a long time ago now. I mean, I'm really digging, but of course I knew who she was because she was one of the best athletes in the conference. Matter of fact, Kent State won a couple of championships because of Breanne. And they asked me, oh, you ever run into her? And they say, nah, I never run into her. Yeah. So while I was having my conversation with Brian on the street, he draws an analogy, as we did, you know, several times, you know, over the course of our friendship, to the world of athletics. And I remember him saying, while we were standing there on the street and having the conversation, he's like, yeah, you know, I've just been working so hard and I really feel as though I've made a nice breakthrough. And then he goes on to say, and my track friends will be able to appreciate this. He goes on to say, yeah, it was like when I first threw 40 feet in the shot put. And once I got that feeling, then I raised the bar and the momentum kept going. And then finally I threw 50 feet and I got to go to the NCAAs. Now, in the world of track and field, 50 feet for a guy in the shot put is not that good. Matter of fact, I was a decathlete. I almost threw 50 feet. And so now when I was having that conversation on the street with him, in my head, I'm thinking, you know, I really dig Brian, but if, you know, maybe he just thought he was better than what he is. A lot of people in the world of track, but just a lot of people in general, they love to tell stories, and they tell stories so much to the point where they feel as though the story that they're telling is true when in reality it's not true. And so I'm kind of like in my head, you know, I'm still trying to process the whole Vlad thing. I'm still trying to process him telling me about his track and field escapades, and the 50-foot shot put to me is just like, man, maybe he sucked. You know, I don't know, maybe he sucked and he just thought he was good or something, or doesn't realize that I understand what's good and what's not good in men's track. So fast forward, it's that morning, he's getting tweeted at by all these really famous people. And so I'm watching it kind of unfold on social media. And then I see something pop up either from TV Guide or E! Entertainment. And it says, Brian Michaels is the first trans male to portray a trans male character on network television. And this was on the show Queen Sugar, which is on Oprah Winfrey's network. And so I'm reading this, and now all of a sudden I'm replaying all of these conversations that I've had with Brian. I mean, total rewind in my head. And I'm rewinding back about my conversations with the track coaches at Wichita State who used to be at Kent State. Hey, have you ever run into Breanne Smith? No, I never ran into her. And then I'm thinking 50 feet in the shop, but you went to the NCAAs. Well, in my head, like, there's no way as a male you went to the NCAAs. But now I'm thinking, wait a second. Now I've known this cat for like, at this point, like 7 years, right? So I hit him up. I said, Brian, when you were at Kent State University, did you go by Breanne Smith? And so he hits me up and he's like, yeah, man. I think that in his mind, too, his mind is blown that I never put two and two together. And I was like, oh, my gosh. I'm like, I wish. So, again, like I said, I was pretty ignorant about the whole transgender world and community and how it worked and everything. And I'm like, I wish that anybody who doesn't understand the world of transgender could feel what I'm feeling right now, because I am probably the only person in your life that knew you as Breanne Smith. Fast forward about 10 years, maybe 12 years, I meet you again in real life as Brian Michaels, Brian Smith, and I don't put two and two together, because in my mind, in my heart, you're every bit as much of a guy, as a male, as I am. There's nothing in a million years, gun to my head, knowing the guy for all of those years and him living his life and as Brian Michael, why would I even question that? Why would I even think about questioning that? And so everything just kind of came flooding in terms of like my feelings about the situation. And I feel so lucky or blessed or whatever. I've actually been able to experience this because I really can now have a deeper understanding and appreciation and empathy for anyone who is in the same situation that Brian is, because Brian Smith is a guy. Brian Smith is a male. I always refer to him as him. And I can't even imagine, even though I know that I knew him when he was living his life as Breanne, even though I know that, still in my head, it just seems unfathomable to me that someone else would refer to him as anything other than him or he. And so maybe no one can really even appreciate this entire story, but to me, it just resonates so much with me. It really enlightened me. And with it being Pride Month, and, you know, I just felt as though I wanted to share that story. So in any event, I'm going to be back here in a few minutes. I'm going to have my guest on, Eliza Van Court. We're going to be talking about her new book, which I've got right here. I ordered on Amazon. Where is it here? Oh, here we go. Claiming Space, A Woman's Guide to Claiming Space. We're going to be talking about it and why every guy should be reading this as well. I'll be back in just a few minutes. I'm Kevin Barbaro. You're listening to Coffee Talk XL on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
We'll be right back. Hey, everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Wise Content Creates Wealth. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Friday afternoon from 1 p.m. to 2. They say content is king. Well, wise content rules the world. Every episode features tools and tips for content marketing and business people telling the wise content stories of that success. Tune in every Friday from 1 p.m. to 2 on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to Coffee Talk XL. I'm Kevin Barbaro, and you're listening on talkradio.nyc. I've got my very special guest, of course, on with me right now, Eliza Van Court. Eliza and I, actually, we have a little bit of history.
We do.
So we were cast in a movie. Gosh, it was like almost 7 years ago now, I think. It was a long time ago. But we played the movie was called Family Business, and we played a dysfunctional, functioning dysfunction family, where I played the lying, cheating, ex-husband, which wasn't really a whole big stretch for me. And Eliza played my wife, and so that's when we first got to know each other. And
the sociopathic wife. Let's be clear. She was a bit of a sociopath herself.
Yeah. I mean, to this day, I wish that movie went out to the whole world. You know, as people in the world of acting understand that not all movies make it out. But in any event, Eliza actually, I already put it up here, but let me do it again. So she's got a new book, a best-selling book called A Woman's Guide to Claiming Space. And she is a fellow at Cornell University. She does TED Talks. She is runs her own acting group. She's a woman of many talents. But the one thing I want to talk about tonight, though, is I want to talk about, just the entire process of you landing on this, which is amazing, and let's talk about why it's important for this kind of discussion to be happening, not just between you and other women, but honestly, if we've talked on the phone this last week, other men, men like me should be reading this to kind of take a peek behind the curtain. So when did you decide to start the book? And let's start from there.
Well, I wasn't sure if I wanted, I'd always kind of thought, oh, writing a book would be interesting, but it wasn't really something I decided I was going to do. And then in 2013, I was riding my bike, sounds unrelated, but it's not. And somebody thought it was a better idea to text and drive than just drive. And she hit me in the head with her car and I got a bilateral brain injury and a subdural hematoma. And I woke up with severely compromised memory and communication skills that were really compromised. And so I had to break down the HTML of communication in order to really go back to my life. And it was a really long process. And after it was done, I sort of thought, oh, wow, I understand communication in such a deep and profound way, in a way that I never would have needed to before because I was an intuitive communicator before. And then I had to kind of become a mindful communicator. So that was the first step. I started giving talks. And then this is the weird part. Women, if you're listening, you'll get this. So I would start doing my talks. And after my talks, women would follow me to the bathroom. And they would kind of sidle up to me and they'd be like, I got to ask you a question I didn't want to ask in Q&A in front of the guys. And the next thing I know, we're doing another workshop or talk in the bathroom. And what I figured out is there were about 45 questions that people asked me. And it didn't matter if I was in Hong Kong or Florida or Texas or New York. It was the same questions. And so eventually I figured out that the five things that I really learned when I was recovering from my accident, which I call claiming space, those five things, actually, if you put them out in buckets, those questions fall into one of those five. And then I thought, why am I not scaling this information? I should really get this out there on a wider scale. And so that was sort of the beginning of the book. So you have to get hit in the head with a car, apparently.
Yeah, evidently. Always a good start, I guess. So these five buckets that you're talking about, and obviously you lay this out in the book, but can you give me give us kind of the Reader's Digest version of what are these general, and I do find it interesting, and this is a whole part of the whole claiming space here, that women didn't want to ask these questions to a woman, right? Because there were guys in the room. Mm-hmm. And I don't even think most guys understand that whole process as well. So in any event, let's talk about those five areas.
Mm-hmm. Well, the five areas of claiming space are, and these are the things that when women are mindful about these things, their lives just seem to be better personally and professionally. The first one is claiming space with your physicality and voice. And as actors, we understand this, right? It's how do you present in a room? And these people really know how to present with strength and confidence. The next one is claiming space collaboratively. Women who didn't come at things from a scarcity mentality, but instead were there to raise each other up, did better. The third one is not ceding space. So we all have these messages that we carry around with us, whether they're from our anti-mentors, which I talk about in the book, or they're from, you know, some sort of really bad imposter syndrome. We carry these things, and sometimes we can actually cede space ourselves. So not to do that, understanding those things. The fourth one is not letting anyone impinge upon your space. And that's, you know, goes from interruptions, which is not that big of a deal in the scheme of things, to, you know, sexual harassment, which is a really big deal and rather unpleasant. And then the fifth one is claiming space intersectionally. And what I mean by that is women who made an effort not just to hang out with women who looked like them did better. Women who hung out with people of all different races, of all different backgrounds did better.
And you know, one thing that we were talking about earlier, and this is one reason why I think it is really important for men to hear this and men to dive into the book as well, is that the whole concept of, you know, for whatever reason, men feel we got to explain everything. We got to mansplain everything. We feel like, you know, and one thing we talked about and we can touch on now is that I think a lot of men are afraid of having these conversations because it makes them feel uncomfortable because they're not really as secure as they wish or try to present themselves to be. And so they just immediately write off this kind of conversation or a book like this as just man-hating stuff, you know? And it, that you're not a man-hating. Yeah, let's put that out there.
Right.
And, so, you know, why? What is it that you think it is about men that we feel as though we're entitled to just roll into these spaces that can be occupied by other people?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of it is training, really. And I don't think of it as like, oh, men are bad, they mansplain, they're horrible. What I think of it is, you know, there's research that shows that little boys are told to stop interrupting at a much lower rate than little girls. So when little boys and little girls start talking, the girl shuts up because she's been told, don't interrupt, don't interrupt. And the boys haven't been taught that. So there's just a lot of coding we carry around with us. And it's not that one group is bad or good, but we do need to really deconstruct that if we're going to have more fair interchanges. But one of the things I was telling you about on the phone, which I found really interesting, is I have found that the more confident the man is, the more he's totally cool in his own masculinity, the more he picks up the book that maybe his wife is reading or his girlfriend or his sister, and he's like, oh my God, men need to read this. And it's been the men who are really confident in their own masculinity who've said, yeah, I want to learn about what's going on with women. I found men who don't seem to have that sort of energy are a little bit more like, are you a man hater? I've never gotten that from kind of a more alpha man, which is kind of unpredictable and strange, but that is what it is.
Yeah, you'd almost feel as though maybe it was the opposite, but as a guy, I can see where, like for me, you know, I love having these conversations. You know, I love everybody, man. I just want everybody to be happy. I just want us all get along because we're all in this together, and it isn't about being right or wrong, and it's not about being in power and who I can control and things like. Now, as a guy, I can tell you, I was conditioned that way.
Right.
When I was younger, and I was that way. I mean, I wasn't always the way I am now. I can be honest and say,
right,
I was a dick. <You know? laughs> But, you know, when life humbles you a little bit and you kind of, you know, go through what I went through because my own demise, you know, you start to realize that, like, dude, you're not that important, bro. You know what I mean? Once you grasp that, I think that you're way more open to these kinds of conversations because, like you said on the phone earlier today, men are like, oh, well, he's just man-hater or stuff. And your comment to me was, what, basically, I'm paraphrasing, what makes you think to the guy, you're important enough for me to be a part of this?
Well, basically, I had a reporter say to me once, this isn't some sort of man-hating thing. And my answer was, women being empowered has absolutely nothing to do with hating men. Why
That's right.
you conflate those two things really
yeah.
is confusing to me because
it
just has nothing. They have nothing to do with each other. You know, I mean, I'm sure there are very many empowered women and disempowered women who like men or don't like men. It has nothing to do with that. You know, it's just silly.
Exactly. Well, listen, we're going to be coming back. We got to go to a commercial break right now. We'll be back in just a few minutes to talk more about the book. I'm with Eliza Van Court. I'm Kevin Barbaro. You're listening to Coffee Talk XL on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Podcast Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Kevin Barbro. You're listening to Coffee Talk XL on talkradio.nyc. Make sure you tune in every Tuesday night at 8 o'clock. We're live here, or you can check out the podcast if you're a podcaster on Spotify or Apple or Google. For those people watching the video, this is Tiger, who is part of Rocky's Rescue, which is my nonprofit feline rescue on TNR program. He was actually going to be adopted out. I talked about him in the first episode. I fell in love with this guy. How can you not love this guy, right? So anyway, getting back to our book, getting back to the important stuff here. I say our book, like I have anything to do with it, right? Hey, let's get back to our book, right? I want to get back to the book and to about just the discussion. And, you know, To me, as a guy, and a guy who has gone through growth over time, I know that I can think back, embarrassingly enough, I can think back to scenarios where I know that I was taking someone's space away from them. I mean, you know, when you get older and you think back to like some really dumb crap that you said or whatever, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And so the more that I've been reading your book and the more that we've been communicating, I can remember back when, and I feel terrible about it. What would you say, and of course, women can go and buy the book right now on Amazon and read about it, but what would you say are some of the keys, I don't know, that some of the key advice that you can give to somebody who feels as though they're constantly having their space taken away from them, whether it's by men or other women? I mean, it can happen by, you know, mm-hmm. by anybody, really. Mm-hmm. What are some key things that you think that they should be focusing on?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that the truth is it is a guidebook, right? I wrote it so you could even read it out of order. So if you have something that's bothering you, you're like, ah, I'm dealing with this today. And you go to that chapter, you know, because many of us don't have time to sit down and read a book cover to cover, let's be honest, but we do have things that we're working on. So, you know, everything in there is really part of that process. But I would say one thing that seems to be really connecting with people is the concept of anti-mentors. And if you have an anti-mentor in your life, that can make you feel incredibly small. And getting anti-mentors out of your life is really important. And an anti-mentor is really that person in your life who should be your greatest cheerleader. They are that person that you look to say, oh, good job. You know, I'm proud of you. You did well. And every time, you know, you'll get the reference. Maybe the youngsters won't, but it's like Lucy and Charlie Brown in That Damn Football. Like, she's, you know, Charlie Brown's like, you're not going to pull it this time, are you, Lucy? And she's like, I'd never, Charlie Brown. And then the next thing you know, Charlie Brown's on his back. Like, why? And we do that. And one way you can identify anti-mentors in your life, first of all, you know, if you're around someone who you're constantly feeling disappointed by and they're always sort of making you feel small, that's a good thing. That's a good thing to know about. But the other thing is they do something called intermittent reinforcement. And what that means is they sometimes give you a big reward and then they withhold. And then they give you, they make you feel really good. And then they withhold. And the key is it has nothing to do with your behavior. You can't control it at all. And they've done studies on this where they put a rat in a cage and they have two little levers. One lever, the rat just hits the lever. And every time the rat hits a lever, it gets a reasonable amount of food. So it hits just enough to eat. The other lever, it doesn't give it any food, but once in a while, it gets a huge payday. The rat will sit there and starve, waiting for that one big payday, or get so fat that it can't move instead of going to the other lever. And that is why in gambling, the house always wins.
Yeah.
You know, your head knows you're going to lose money, but once in a while, you get that payday and that keeps you pulling that lever. And so when you have someone in your life who once in a while makes you feel good and a lot of the time makes you feel bad and they should be a mentor, don't give them a bullhorn in your community, in your headspace. Get them, you know, learn how to neutralize them. And I talk about how to do that in the book.
Wow. Yeah. I'm going to be honest with you. This hits home with me because I'm like having this epiphany right now when I've done that. And really, obviously, it's a control thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wanting, as men, I think that we feel as though we need to or want to be in control. And part of it's out of insecurity. We don't want to give up control. We don't mm-hmm. want to share. Mm-hmm. You know, we just want to have. And we just want the people around us to look up to us. There's something about being a guy that you thrive when people look up to you and go to you, and you can manipulate that relationship, just like what you're saying, where you just give a little bit, or sometimes you don't give anything at all, and was completely worthy of praise, but then you give all this big praise all at once, and now all of a sudden, ooh, he loves me again,
right?
And the rest of the time is constantly having to feel as though you've got to prove yourself.
That's right.
And, obviously you wrote this for women, you know, and how they can overcome this. What do you say to, what could you possibly say to a guy so that we can think more along these lines where we're not putting someone in a position where they're constantly feeling as though they're controlled by us.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I do think that the first step is sort of like, oh, I do that. I mean, I kind of equate it to, as a white woman, my journey on race, you know, which is like, I've realized now that I've done some work on race that, wow, I really wish I'd done some things differently, you know, but if I were to sit there and beat myself up over it, I would just stop working on it because it would just be too painful.
Yeah.
So for me, you know, I kind of go with this mantra of this. Maya Angelou has this great saying, which is, you know, do what you can do until you know better. Then when you know better, do better. Hmm. And it's just, you know, I did what I could do until I knew better. When I knew better, I did better. So if you start learning about this stuff and you're like, oh, crap, I really manipulated someone. You know, yes, that's unfortunate, but would be more unfortunate is if you kept doing it.
Right.
That would be unfortunate.
You acknowledge it and you're like, hey, that worked.
Right. That was actually, now that I think about it, that was damn effective. Like, yeah. I'm going to do more intermittent reinforcement. So that was really, you know, so instead it's like when there are parts of the book, you know, I have this one whole section of the parts, the different categories of people who say one thing and do another. And there are like 12 different categories of those kind of people. And, you know, when people read it, when I first did the draft, people, you know, called me and they were like, oh, shit, I know I'm like one of those things. And what I said to people is, you know, people who are fully one of those things are in such denial that they don't see themselves. So first of all, you're not. You may have some characteristics of those things. And that's okay. Like, all you need to do is work on it. And not beat yourself up over it. And I think that's all we can do in this life, really. I mean, you say men like being in control. I don't know a woman who doesn't like being in control, too. I just think we've been taught different societal ways of doing it, you know?
Yeah, without a doubt. And I just think that, you know, from a guy, being a guy, you know, it's easier for us to take because of just to our psyche, the way that we're wired, you know, because it's easy for us to turn off the emotion. So if I'm just going to take it, and if she's not going to give, I'll just move on. Mm-hmm. And so you're not conceding the space. You're just moving on. You're just mm-hmm. cutting that person out, you know. And as guys, it's a little easy for whatever reason. It's easier for us to just do that, and which obviously isn't a healthy way to go through life. Anyway, we're got to wrap up here, but I'm so proud of you. This is so great, and you can get it on Amazon. I think I bought it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Amazon, though. You can get it on Amazon. Yeah.
You can get it on Amazon. Eliza Vancourt. I got it up here. Women's Guide to Claiming Space. And there's even in the back, there's like a workbook for you to kind of guide your way through all of this. And listen, I got to have you back on the show because we got way more to talk about, girl.
Right? Yes, we do.
And particularly,
we always have good conversations.
Yeah, and next time we're going to touch on all of this stuff behind you, which is obviously your work board there. So, but in any event, I'm so happy that you're on here, and I'll talk to you again soon. I'm Kevin Barbaro. Thanks for listening to Coffee Talk XL on TalkRadio.nyc. I'll be back next Tuesday, every Tuesday, 8 o'clock live, and we'll see you then.
Listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on TalkRadio.nyc, I host the program Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on TalkRadio.nyc.
Hi, I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Wise Content Creates Wealth. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Friday afternoon from 1 p.m. to 2. They say content is king. Well, wise content rules the world. Every episode features tools and tips for content marketing and business people telling the wise content stories of that success. Tune in every Friday from 1 p.m. to 2 on talkradio.nyc.
Hey, all you listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talk Radio NYC with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply send us a message on our website, talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.